Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. We are Three Women, Three Ways. We are here every Saturday morning to talk with you about news events and violence against women and all those things that make up our lives and make up the lives of women everywhere. And we look at it from our three different perspectives. Those different perspectives are similar in some ways, but also pretty different. Connie Sue is one of my co-hosts. Connie Sue, tell us about yourself and what brought you here.
Well, good morning, ladies and listeners. This is Pink Lee, known as the Pink Lady. My real name is Connie Sue, so that's my my nickname, and that evolved out of my surviving domestic violence. I left in the middle of summer and knew that my garden of beautiful pink flowers would die, and I felt the same way. So I rebuilt my life, and that was that was a long time ago. Since then, I've gotten a bachelor's degree in social justice and currently am involved in a local nonprofit dual agency, which works with survivors of both sexual assault and domestic violence. I come from a pretty lengthy history of education, knowledge, and experience. What about you, Deborah?
Hey, happy Saturday. Well, I'm just coming back from a whirlwind week of travel across the state of Washington. On Monday, I started in my hometown of Vancouver, went to work in Olympia, then we drove to Anacortes, then I drove to SeaTac and flew to Spokane, and then back to Spokane and drive home to Vancouver. So I've been to all four corners.
Wow. You've been busy this week.
Yeah, that's an exciting way to live, right? Out of your suitcase.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here. I am also involved in anti-violence work and have been for a number of years. My tagline is, I have lived it, I have studied it, and I have worked it. And the ed I talk about is specifically domestic violence, but over the years it's branched out to all forms of violence. And we're happy to be here this morning, right, Heather?
We are indeed. It's a nice day here where I am. Sun is shining, and it looks like it's going to be a great day, and it looks like we're going to have a great show here. And my background is I've also experienced domestic violence, but I've kind of thrown myself into the academic area and studying domestic violence and domestic violence issues. And also I'm part of a nonprofit group to deal or help survivors of domestic violence and see what we can do to help them get back to as normal a life as they can be. So we come from somewhat similar perspectives and somewhat different perspectives, but we're all here in the anti-violence thing. And what we're going to talk about today is work. Women in the workplace, women experiencing domestic violence, and how that impacts their work. Deborah, there's two ways that we can have impact on work. One is the immediate impact of things that happen with your abuser and your current employer and all of that. Why don't we start talking about that? There's also the way that after you achieve some sort of peace, there are lingering effects. And studies are showing that there are a lot of effects on work later in life for women. But let's talk about the immediate effects and the immediate impact of domestic violence in the workplace.
Yeah, just to remind everybody that nearly one-third of all U.S. women, 31%, report being physically or sexually assaulted by a husband or boyfriend at some point in their life. So that's an extremely high number. Now let's look at domestic violence. If that many people are affected by domestic violence, sexual assault, and other stalking in their personal lives, you have to think beyond that and know that it's going to impact their work. And one of the ways I clearly remember it impacting me as I was trying to be a responsible employee, the ex would call in sick for me. Yeah, if he didn't want me to go to work that day, he would call my employer and tell him I was sick.
Would he tell you that he was doing that?
Oh, afterwards.
Oh.
Yeah, afterwards. And then another way that he would try to control me is to, a lot of my jobs were entry level or front line, and my job would be to answer the telephone. So I would get a call kind of, you know, later in the afternoon, and he'd say, "What are you doing? I've been trying to call you all day at work. Are you at work?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm so sorry that my job means I have to answer the phone for everybody else. I can't be here just to answer the phone for you to call and check on me." And so what happened was the people around me would hear those conversations. And, you know, that would impact their perception of me and of him. And it can be somewhat of a negative way, but why don't you share how it impacted you while you were married to the ex?
Well, my ex, I was actually employed by him. He owned his own business, and I had my own field that I wanted to go into, but as a way of controlling and manipulating, he said, "Well, you know, I can't afford to hire an employer, and if I'm not successful, then, you know, we're going to be in debt, and we're going to not have money, and blah, 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 so it's in your best interest to come and help me with my work."
Yeah.
And so I did. And what happened is I spent an awfully long time being abused at work. One of his favorite things was to have some sort of catastrophe happen that I didn't know about, and then come to me and say, "Oh, there's a problem here. Go take care of it."
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd start looking at it and find out that not only was it a problem, it was a huge catastrophe, and I was supposed to go around and make it good, make it better. And, boy, I really worked hard trying to do that. And then I'd come back and he'd say I would have accomplished something and actually gotten it to be taken care of in our best interests. And I would go to him and tell him, and he'd say, "That's not what I wanted you to do. No, I won't agree to that."
Mm-hmm.
And very frustrating. It was just constantly being played like a fish on a line, and as you can imagine, that takes a lot of toll on your emotional life and your sanity.
Right.
So he found a way, and periodically I would say, you know, "I can't do this with you anymore," and I'd go either start my own business or I would go and find work elsewhere, and he would find a way to have a catastrophe at his office that required my being there. It was always, "Well, if you don't come back, then your kids aren't going to be able to go to their private schools, or you won't be able to do that." And he had no qualms about, like, not paying the mortgage payment or something so that I would see in the mail, you know, notices of delinquency. And of course, that would scare me. And so
yeah,
I would go ahead and go back to work for him. But it was pretty tough. It was pretty miserable. And I can only imagine trying to work for an employer who didn't understand what you were going through and having to deal with stuff like that. It just is frightening.
Right. Another consequence for me was that I never had long-term employment history. As soon as I'd start doing well in a job, he would start his sabotage. That's what I called it, was his campaign to get me in a negative performance kind of situation, or he would decide that my salary did not compensate for all the transportation and all the extra money it cost. He would perform a cost-benefits analysis, so to speak, and say, "It doesn't pay us to have you work outside the home." And it usually evolved around his not wanting to be the major caregiver of the children when I was at work. So that's another way you can be controlled. When you go to an employer to apply for a job and you have a 10-year work history and you've had 10 different jobs, they tend to look at that in a negative way, like, "You're not very stable, are you?"
Yeah, exactly.
Your ability to get those jobs that maybe are higher up than entry level, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a long-term impact. Connie Sue, I know you have kind of a different story around work and economics in your relationship. Do you want to talk about yours?
Sure. It was absolutely, in retrospect, crazy. After we got married, just within a few days, maybe less than that, when we got back from the honeymoon, I was instructed that I couldn't work outside of the home, that it wouldn't be good for taxes. I wouldn't make enough to contribute, and the cost of dry cleaning, and so the cost of me being employed would not be beneficial to the income of the home.
Yeah.
And, of course, I interpreted, and, you know, it's been a long time, so that's not verbatim, but that was the implication or the assumption that was being presented.
Yeah.
And I want you here.
Yeah,
and, so,
and wasn't that sweet that he wanted to take care
yeah.
of
it? Yeah, you know, the concern of expenses, and, yeah, certainly my income would be no match to his, I'll tell you that.
Let me jump in here. We would love to hear your experiences and have you join us in this conversation. You can do so by calling us at 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430, or join us on the chat room, and you can give us your written comments. We'd love to hear from you about this. We know that these experiences are not unique. One of the problems of having this kind of stuff going on at work is that, as you pointed out, the employers don't want to see that. They're employing you to come and work for them. And if you're constantly doing personal work, that is a huge detriment. Did either of you experience that, where your employer just said, I'm sorry, but I have to let you go?
Well, that wasn't my experience in the workplace, but that was sort of what happened at home. I mean, I thought of my position as a stay-at-home wife and manage the finances, manage the home, be on call for dinner parties and hosting business associates, and it was never good enough. So even though I wasn't directly employed, I think the similarities of the perspective happened in the home life. So it's, like I said, it's not the same, but there are definite similarities to that.
You know, let's move beyond the personal impact to the actual impact in the workplace itself for survivors.
Okay.
And one of the statistics I located said 37% of women who experienced violence reported that it had an impact in their work in the form of lateness, missed work, keeping a job, or career promotions. So that's a little more than a third of all women who had reported domestic violence in the first place had a direct impact on their ability to work. And then the Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimates the annual cost of lost productivity related to domestic violence equals $727 million. With more than 7.9 million paid workdays lost each year.
Well, that absenteeism is a huge factor. It looks like there's also a lot, in the research I did, excessive absenteeism, and that, of course, is not helpful for the employer at all. And there's also physical and psychological fallout from the abuse, so that even when you're there, even when he's not, you know, trying to abuse you or whatever, you're still carrying that around with you, and that is affecting your output at work and your success and all that kind of stuff. Your work relationships too, are affected by this. So huge impacts, and that doesn't even count the occasions, and it does happen where the abuser follows the woman to work, usually when she's trying to leave the situation, and actually commits violence at the workplace.
Absolutely. About 1 million women and 370,000 men who are victims of stalking in the U.S. say that this followed them to the workplace. So stalking in the workplace situation, that raises the level of danger not only to the two people involved in the relationship, but everyone around them, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So it can be a real dangerous thing, not only for the woman who's going through it, but people around her.
Exactly.
And employers sometimes are not willing to accept that danger, and so they're more willing to look for reasons to get rid of the person and get rid of that problem in their work environment.
Yeah. So there's some other ways. Not only is it a performance and productivity concern in the workplace, but it's a healthcare concern because it can raise the need for medical coverage and all the attendant, you know, injuries and the mental health aspect as well. And then they say it's also a management issue that, let's see, it says 91% of senior corporate executives said that domestic violence affects both the private and working lives of their employees, and half of those surveys were aware that employees have been affected by domestic violence. So half of the supervisors were aware their employees were involved in a domestic violence relationship. So that's quite a large, I think, you know, group of people acknowledging that they knew it was there. So that's kind of interesting to me. What do you think about that, Connie Sue?
Yeah, I think that the important thing to do right now is to maybe do a shout-out for some numbers for people to call in if they're concerned or they're experiencing this in their workplace. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I have found some resources for safety planning around domestic violence in the workplace and policy making. So we could share those kinds of things as well. Were you thinking of those agencies that I mentioned that I discovered working on the issue already?
Yeah, and there's also a website called Futures Without Violence. It used to be called Formerly Family Violence Prevention Fund, and there's a worksheet here on the facts on the workplace of domestic violence. But there's also a handout that I discovered, and this is on the Washington State Coalition of Domestic Violence or Against Domestic Violence website, and there's an actual law that was put into place in Washington State. And this is, of course, only for Washington. I'm not familiar with the other states. It's the law, it's Revised Code of Washington 49.76, the Domestic Violence Leave Law, went into effect in April of 2008, so that anyone needs to take a leave from their employer, they're not able to let you go because of that. And I think that that's an important piece. I think people are often really concerned or afraid about taking leave, and or maybe they don't have any leave accrued.
Right.
I think that's an important aspect to point out, is that there is a law in place that allows you to take leave from your employer if needed.
Yeah, and that's an important rule, I think, that came into effect. And it was really a well-thought-out rule. I remember us receiving training on that. Do you too, Connie Sue?
I haven't received direct training on it, no.
Well, we did at my nonprofit, and they said you have to report the incident of domestic violence. That's the one kind of drawback, is you have to tell someone above you in your work chain, and you have to notify them within a certain time limit, reasonable time limit. It's not like time clock. Like, if you don't tell me you can't work today because of domestic violence within 24 hours, it doesn't count. It's called reasonable circumstances, and it actually becomes a labor and industry claim at that point. So there's ways that at least ensures, if you don't have the leave time on the books, that you do not lose your job over it, and gives you the time you need to go to court or go to those appointments or whatever it is you need to do. So
right.
I'm really, really proud of Washington State for doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
I also want to do a shout out for the state, the domestic violence hotline, in case anybody needs to call and get support or if they're wanting more information about this. It's 1-800-562-6025. And the website that you can go to actually take you directly to more information on the taking leave is getmoneygetsafe.org, takingleave.cfm. But if you go to the Washington State Coalition Against Domestic Violence, there's a link there that talks about, and you can just type in the search box domestic violence in the workplace or taking leave, and it'll take you directly to this handout, which is, I think, just a really nice way of outlining it that will give you the most immediate information that you need to have.
So, well, that sounds like some really good resources. We're going to talk more about this topic, but we're going to take a little break right now, and Deborah, you're going to tell us about your other podcasting show.
Well, I'd be delighted. My other radio show is called Deborah Says. Deborah Says stands for, the S-E-S stands for Self-Empowerment Strategies, because I believe that we've all been impacted by a form of violence at some point in our life. And we often do not acknowledge and accept that that happened to us, let alone think about the impacts it has on our life over time. So please join me. My show is Sunday evenings at 7 p.m., and that's Pacific Standard Time, or Daylight Time. I guess we're on Daylight Time again. So please join me, and you can find me under Deborah Says, S-E-S, and I'd love to have you join me. Thanks, Heather, for that opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. Let's get back to the workplace issues. Connie Sue, you were talking about some resources. Are there employers that allow you to go to your own company's human resources to get some assistance in this field, or is that a risky thing for a woman to do?
Well, I have some information on that if Connie doesn't. Are you ready to go on that?
Well, I think that the thing to think about is your safety plan. And some employers offer employees assistance programs, which is a confidential resource. So that could be a one resource that I would check with your employer to see if it's available. What other things do you have for us, Deb?
Well, definitely go to your human resources professional, your office, if you have at the workplace. I think 78% of human resource professionals polled said that domestic violence is a serious workplace issue. And that's a stat from 1995. So that shows me that the human resources professional development career, you know, associations have been aware of and working on this for a long time, and I think that says a lot. So, and that the human resources is required to keep that confidential. So they do the best they can. And I also think that some employers have a program called Employees Assistance Program.
And that was what I was just mentioning. It's the EAP.
Yeah, and those are wonderful. They're free to you. If your company has one, I highly recommend using it. I know I've used it in the when I had it available to me, and it was very helpful. So those are good. But beyond that, I think that we have to employers need to be aware that it's a security and a liability issue for them, too. If they're not prepared to manage domestic violence effects in the workplace, they're at a high risk of, you know, it just increases the danger for everyone, not to mention, and at an increase for liability. I was going to say that this one organization I discovered is called Employers Against Domestic Violence. They're located in Massachusetts, and they are a resource across the nation for any workplace that wants to find, and they have newsletters, they have studies, they have best practices and model policies, and all those sort of things, have a lot of other resources that you can take advantage of. So Let's see, at the bottom of the page here. Their number is 508-894-6322. And it's the website is actually employersagainstdomesticviolence.org. So that's a very great resource, I think. And I wanted to give a shout-out to the Liz Claiborne company, because actually I thought it was late 90s. Now, as I've done my research, it's early 90s that they actually began a nationwide campaign, because it was important to their organization. So they've really been the leader in this this kind of, you know, developing workplace policies and protocols and having a safety plan in the workplace and ways to, you know, work with survivors to keep them working so that they don't have to lose their job. Actually, in the state of Washington, I'm sure other states, there's also a way that if you do lose your job, if you do get fired or laid off because of related to domestic violence, that you do qualify for unemployment payments. So that's an important support that many people aren't aware of as well. So keep that in mind.
And in many cases, in workplaces where domestic violence has occurred, I know a particular case back east where a woman was actually killed at work. Her abuser came to work and killed her. And her survivors sued the workplace for not providing safety for her. And there were some other circumstances, of course. I mean, they lost.
Didn't the company end up paying something like $850,000? They settled with the family because the company had been notified of possible danger, and they didn't do anything to prevent or protect the rest of their staff either. So that's
pretty. Yeah, and that's another issue that a lot of times we don't think about, and that is often when an abuser goes to work, where the workplace, it's not just the victim that's hurt. Oftentimes it's involving a lot of other people, and if you think about all the news reports that you've heard about workplace violence, and you keep reading long enough, usually you'll find out, well, she'd just filed for divorce, or there were reports of domestic violence in their relationship in the previous few years or months. So it is an obligation, and it is a real problem in the workplace. So if you work for a small organization without a human resources department, I suggest you go to your local domestic violence resources, your Coalition Against Domestic Violence, or the shelters, or whatever you can find. Call the hotline, and they will give you some resources. But I suggest you go there, and they will know exactly what you can do to help minimize that workplace violence that could occur for you.
Heather, you bring up a really great point of view there, is that so we have survivors in the workplace, we also have batterers.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we don't think so much of it in terms of that, but they also have, that also causes a huge impact on the employer. I found a University of Vermont study that talked to men in batterers treatment programs, and they said 73% of the people in the survey reported never having been in trouble with their employee for any other issues such as drugs, alcohol, or violence at work. 73% said that, and 45% said they had a criminal background check on them before they went to work, and they passed. So you would think that these are kind of key ways that you do a criminal background check and you would know if someone was an abuser. Well, what do we know about that, ladies?
Yeah. Well, the reason we're laughing about that is because the penalties for abusers are pretty minimal until it gets really egregious. And if a man is arrested for domestic violence, it can usually be I think they call that a deferred sentence, and if he goes through treatment, then it just is wiped clean from his record. It's very difficult to find an actual criminal record for most of the men who have abused.
And so much of it's not even reported.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, there's another aspect to this issue, and this one is pretty dear to my heart, and that is, okay, say you've survived leaving the abuser. You've been divorced, or you've gotten him out of your life as much as you can. You are on your way, and now you want to become the best person you can become after this experience. So you focus on your work, you want to do well, you would like to climb a career path again, or at least have a job that you enjoy, and guess what? There are lingering effects from that domestic violence experience, and we know about physical effects that linger. There are also some emotional effects that linger, and looks like even down the road in employment, it can be impacted by this experience that you went through. So it looks like even past that immediate crisis, and you know, I'm talking about immediate, like it could be a couple of years, but even after things kind of settle down and you think, okay, I've made it, the majority of women still face really strong obstacles in getting or maintaining employment. And some of those obstacles are, you know, ongoing legal issues, ongoing child care obligations, you're going to see that absenteeism again, and you're going to see, a lot of cases, post-traumatic stress disorder. And that can affect your interpersonal relationships and your work relationships. One of the things that you have with post-traumatic stress disorder is you have a trigger. In my case, it was a certain phrase, and it was a fairly common phrase, but I went to work, and my employer used that phrase, and I immediately froze. I just wanted to throw up. I had to leave the work area. I went to the restroom. I tried to calm down, but that affected me for the rest of the day. So my productivity that day was pretty much nil. And that can happen 10, 15 years, even more, after you've experienced domestic violence. So trying to build a work or career path after you've gotten through a domestic violence situation, it's still causing problems. Have you experienced this, Deborah or Pinkley?
Pinkley, you want to jump in there?
We're both quiet. That's unusual.
That tells me that you probably have.
Well, and I would like to just maybe, I mean, I know we're talking about workplace specifically, but I think that those triggers that you're talking about sort of they have an impact on the rest of your life. And whether you're in a workplace or in trying to, you know, develop relationships, so on and so forth. And fortunately, you know, my where I went off and did my career was in a agency that supports survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. So, but there are still cases and situations where, you know, like you said, Heather, something that somebody says, sometimes even a smell or a, you know, just an instant can bring up thoughts or feelings for you. So my purpose of bringing that up is to normalize that for people, that an event has occurred, an unusual traumatic event in your life, and that those are normal reactions to those abnormal events. And it's trauma, and I think the trauma that you've experienced will lessen over time, but it still lives with you. There are still certain events that live with you. So what are your thoughts on that, Deborah?
Yeah, I think the impact is long-term. I think it's ongoing. I think it actually changes who we are as human beings, and sometimes we don't want that to change. You know, maybe we would rather it didn't change. So
yeah.
Are we fighting that, or are we still going with that? You know, I think that definitely it has impacted our ability to have retirement funds, or, you know, as long as Social Security is around, that's you know, our amount of money that gets put away in our name is much less than those who have not had a sporadic work history or a challenged work history impacted by violence throughout the years. So I think that that's something all three of us are struggling with is, you know, what's going to happen when we need to retire, because I just don't have the I wasn't able to get the kind of jobs that included retirement as a benefit based on my 17-year lived experience with the abuser, because I had so many and multiple and various jobs that it was very hard for me to figure out how to get to the work that, you know, I feel like I'm contributing to the world. And I don't know if you feel that same way or not, but retirement's a huge issue.
Yep.
Often,
and
they're
just for me, there just is no retirement. I mean, there won't be. The resources that I'd worked for with my husband for a number of years were all used up in the divorce, and there's just going to be no retirement for me. I'm going to have to work till I die, and if I get to the point where I can't work, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, I don't know, look for a train to jump in front of or something, because that financial impact was so severe that it's just devastating. And maybe if you're really young when you leave, you have hopes of, like you said, Deborah, getting a job that provides or working yourself up the career ladder. But again, you're dealing with all this residual effect that you'll actually have for most of your life. And sometimes that, those residual effects, like PTSD or physical effects, prevent you from, you know, the career path that you thought you were going to have.
Yeah.
So that economic part of the fallout, domestic violence and how it affects your work is definitely there, definitely a huge issue. And I think that sometimes we forget about that, and I think a lot of decisions about domestic violence are made because of that financial issue.
Yeah, I do too. Hey, I was wondering, Heather, if you'd like to tell us about Heal Everywhere.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to tell you about that. Heal Everywhere is a nonprofit that I helped fund or found. I didn't help fund it. And it helps women who have been through domestic violence. I always say that there are stages to domestic violence. One is the shock of finding yourself in it. The next one is being a victim of it. And then after that, a survivor of it. So in my view, a survivor of it is somebody who has actually been through it, aren't necessarily in crisis mode anymore, but still, you know, dealing with all these long-term effects from domestic violence. So we created Heal Everywhere to help women who have who are now past that crisis and who are trying to build their lives back. And one of the ways that we can do this is with a service dog. And so we have what we call DV Doggy, and it's a program. And there's a lot of details about it. You know, it has to match the Americans for Disabilities Act, and there's all sorts of things that you have to make sure you qualify for. But since almost 80% of domestic violence survivors suffer from PTSD, and that's one of the reasons that a service dog might be required, we find that a service dog can really help women who are trying to get back and get back to normal. If you have a fear, for example, of certain places, the service dog can help you. A service dog can be trained to sense your anxiety. A service dog can be trained to literally take you back to your car if you cannot find your car because of cognitive problems. So there are many ways that a service dog can help you, and that's one of our programs called DV Doggy. And if you would like to learn more about that, join us on Facebook, and we'll be happy to give you information and tell you how you can help. So Heal Everywhere, and be happy to give you more information and to see if we can help you.
That's this would fantastic, be a good point. Heather, thank you.
You're welcome. Let me toss out the phone number again. We have a chat room that you can access, and we also have that phone number, 646-378-3000. 0430. Please give us a call and let us know how work has been impacted by an experience of domestic violence, either yours or someone you know. I'd love to hear more about it. So, okay, so we're talking about being in the workplace and still having these residual effects from domestic violence. What, you know, are there resources for women who are in the workplace to get some assistance?
I think it's their somewhat the normal resources. If you have a local nonprofit agency that works on domestic violence and sexual assault, they're a good resource. And if their services are not what you need, they can often refer you to some other places where you might find more help and more assistance. I was thinking it might be good to talk about a safety plan in the workplace. What do you think, Connie Sue?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that could be if you're still with a person or not. It could be an emotional, it could be an economical, it could be a physical, it could be all of the above. Just a plan. And I think it's helpful to define what a safety plan is. I think there's some assumption that the words themselves imply to what that means, but what that looks like. And that, I think, is very different for each person on what that plan of safety is. And I also like to think that, I think that there can be great opportunity for people starting new careers or going back to the workplace. It could also be a very empowering and healing aspect of regaining your life, empowerment, and then having a plan of safety. I mean, the thing that you were saying earlier, Heather, just, you know, a phrase. And so to know that about yourself and to come up with a plan that says, okay, this is what I'll do if this comes up. This is how I'll try to respond. And a lot of times I think that as women we end up negating and pushing down those feelings that we're experiencing or those fears, and I totally support honoring those and recognizing them and making that part of your empowerment rather than it continue to have a hold on you that impacts you in that severe of way. The impact is never going to go away, I don't believe. It's part of who you are. Your life changes. And I think a safety plan can also change throughout a person's life. So yeah. A plan of safety is, you know, if you're still in the situation, what that looks like. It might be informing your employer if that's a safe thing for you to do. What else, other thoughts do you have, Heather or Deborah?
Well, I think, you know, planning a safety plan at work is great. I could picture in certain organizations being able to sit down with the human resources person and putting together that plan together mm-hmm. because it's also important for the workplace to have a safety plan in place. They need to also deal with, okay, what do we do if? Because they can be held liable for situations where other employees are hurt or even you are hurt. So it's important for the employer. One of the problems, one of the cautions that I feel is that, and of course, you know, I mean, you ladies know I'm working on this particular issue for my dissertation, for my PhD, and one of the professors that I dealt with in discussing my topic, which is, you know, domestic violence in the workplace, said to me, this is really important information to know, but what if employers use it against the victim?
Yeah. So that's
and I went, ooh, hadn't thought of that.
That's against the law. It's called discrimination, but that takes a whole other set of energies, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. It's one thing having a law, and it's another thing trying to see that it works, you know.
I have a little short list here that people could think about when they're maybe working on a safety plan in workplace. And some of the things they mentioned that might be easier to do was for the survivor to change their phone number or their extension. It might be possible to relocate that that position to a different office or maybe to a different, you know, I mean, physically different different address, or just change the space in the office. Talk about having someone screen your calls, if that's possible. Maybe it won't be, but that's something to think about. Or a voicemail system that you just let everything go to voicemail first. Mm-hmm. Find ways to reassure that your home address and telephone remain confidential. Have a security guard or other coworker escort you to your car or to the nearest public transportation stop if that's how you get to and from work. Have a locked door on your office that separates you from the open parts of the office. Also, if you have a protection order or order of protection or restraining order, whichever your state names it, then it would be good to have a copy of that on file in your human resources file, and then also to check in with your security department and get to know the security personnel. It says, perhaps you would even want to post a picture of the abuser at the security desk so that if they do see this person in the hallways or entering, then they are alerted to step up their protective instincts. And then your employer could also get a restraining order against the abuser, particularly if that abuser has already been to your office and been harassing you. So those are some things to think about. Anything to add to that, Heather or Connie Sue?
Well, again, I go back to this issue, a lot of, you know, remembering my experience, I didn't want anybody to know. It was embarrassing. It was humiliating. I didn't want anybody to know. I think that as women, we need to start thinking about these things before they actually happen.
Yes.
You can be all happy and joyful, and your relationship can be great, and that's wonderful, and I hope it stays that way. But have some idea of what you would do if it changes. And I think the more we think about it, the more we have it in our minds that this is something that could happen, the less stigma that will be attached with it, and the less the woman will feel like she needs to be embarrassed or ashamed when it happens. On the other hand, I'm also very practical. Sometimes, even though there are laws and even though there are resources, sometimes an employer will go, ooh, red flag, I just want to get rid of her. And so there is that risk that you have to assess. But I think that all things being said, that it is significant that you do acknowledge that this is a problem, that you do share with your employer that this is a problem that could visit the workplace. And if you don't want to do it for yourself, do it for your coworkers.
Absolutely. What are you thinking, Connie Sue?
Well, I'm thinking, is it safe to go to your employer? I mean, I agree with Heather. There's a lot of shame and humiliation with that. And exposure. I mean, I think that there could be, I mean, it really depends on where you work. So you really would have to look at that on an individual basis. But what I'm thinking is that when we know that by changing the situation, whether you leave or you've gotten a protection order to get the person out of the home and you are employed, or for whatever situation you're in, the increase of danger goes up by 75%. And that's really scary. And if you're not a person that can predict their behavior, a person's behavior, and being at your workplace, if that's what you're doing and trying to keep a job, could be a potentially pretty unsafe place. And that's just such a huge feeling of responsibility, I think, for a person.
Well, I agree with what you're both saying about that. I understand totally that we don't want to talk about it because it's humiliating. But I think there are ways now that we can have it be addressed through the human resources and to have all employers have a domestic violence in the workplace policy that's the same as you can't come to work under the influence of drugs policy.
That's fine. And I agree with that too, Deb. And I totally agree with that. But I'm thinking more on the level of employers that are small in staff.
Yep.
Maybe there isn't a human resource person.
Huge number of businesses in this country are small businesses with staff
right.
under 10 people.
Well,
and so they don't have a specific department.
That they're small, but I disagree. You're painting a pretty grim picture of employers out there. And I actually think it could work the other way in small businesses. You might actually get more support.
Yes, you might.
And I think both can be.
You might get someone who says, you know what, I have been through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot easier on a smaller company basis to work around a lot of the specifics you might need to work around. I think I've worked for a big company, and everything is a policy and a procedure and a practice, and it all takes a lot of time. But, you know, I've also worked for smaller companies where I feel like if that were to have happened, well, it did happen to me. What am I saying? When I worked in a small company, where's my head at? But and the employer was not responsive. In fact, I went to work after my worst physical assault, and because the employer herself was sort of abusive, not sort of, was abusive, and she had said, don't, you know, when you're sick, it costs me money, and I want you here, we're small staff, and when you're not here, it just causes problems for everybody. So I was afraid at that point to take a sick day, kind of for a lot of the reasons we've been talking about here, and I went there with my bruises, and she said to me, I can't believe you showed up today looking like this. I said,
make up your mind, lady.
Like, I felt I had no choice. I want to keep my job, and so I came. And actually, it did offend a lot of people at the front desk. I was really surprised by the entire reaction because, again, it was a front, you know, direct service entry-level front person position. So as they were bringing their children into this after-school program, they would look at me and their eyes would get big and no one said a word.
Ugh.
But you could just feel the tenseness in the air around.
Well, I think you're right, Deborah, that there is the potential of having an even closer relationship with a small employer, but it's just as likely that you won't have. And the reason that I bring it out and is that it is just as all the things that we do when we're going through this situation, you have to evaluate what's in your best interests.
And that is part of a safety plan, whether you do that with someone else, you're doing it internally. You know, I think both can be true. Both scenarios can be true either way. So it's really about your personal situation that we're talking about.
So another really good idea for survivors in the workplace is to actually know what the leave policies are, disability policies, collective bargaining agreements if they belong to a union, sexual harassment policies, and if they have a domestic violence or workplace violence policy. Those are good things for all humans to know about their work.
Yes.
I think a lot of times we just tend to say, oh, well, that's a policy and I don't really give a darn, you know, that'll never happen to me. But the point is, I think as educated employees, we need to really look into those and know if you know ahead of time that your workplace has a domestic violence or workplace violence policy, is that going to make you feel a little more comfortable in if it rises to a danger level, in your opinion, to go and talk to your human resources or your supervisor?
Sure.
Yeah, I think
that would go a long ways to help.
Yeah.
And well, that's also assuming that you have a lot of wherewithal. So often I think women who are abused have been abused, and they're kind of beaten down, and they just don't have the energy or the capability at that particular point of taking on that kind of business-like thing. of, okay, now I have to, let me see, my husband beat the heck out of me last night, and so now I have to check out my employee contract and the HR service. You know, that, I think for some women that's asking a lot. And so, again, I would encourage you, I would encourage every woman to seek support from a domestic violence agency. Maybe they will not be able to advise you as far as your particular contract, but they will be able to offer you support, be there with you, help you, so you're not alone in doing all this stuff.
You know what, Heather? I love that you have so much faith in the advocacy community.
But is there a but there?
Our program, what I would like to think is that we're here to offer support, and it's really, truly about, I wholeheartedly believe this, I always will, is to listen to your own intuition. You know what is best for your situation. Even in your darkest hour, whether that's physically, emotionally, spiritually, economically, you know what is best for you. And the key to this is that to seek out information, get support, validation, safety, and to tap into your strength, because my goodness, as a survivor of domestic violence, I think that you are actually strong, courageous. Even if you are considering yourself a victim, you are still surviving, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's at home, whether it's in a community that does not offer support. You are your best. And you have the guiding light within you. And if you can survive this, you will survive.
You will thrive.
One of the things I think that a lot of women do is distrust their instincts.
Absolutely.
I call it my little flashing light, and mm-hmm. if you come upon a situation and you have that little flashing light going off, saying, "Wait a minute, is this right?" Or maybe you can't even verbalize what it is, but you know what? Trust that little inner voice. Trust it, because
right.
I think a lot of us wish we had trusted it earlier instead of having our brains going, oh, no, you're overreacting. Oh, no, that's not the way he meant that. Because you do that for long enough, and then it's kind of the frog in the boiling water thing. You will accept more and more and more because you're not trusting yourself, and your inner self is saying, no, that's not right. But
right.
instead of listening to it, we try to do what we think we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that is to support our husbands. And, you know, I wish I had a dollar for every time I came up with an excuse. Well, it's because, you know, he's had a rough day at work. It's because, there's problems with work. It's problems with his family. There's problems, you know. Once that's resolved, then he'll be fine.
Yeah.
And every time each of these things was resolved, there was another thing that made him not fine. So I spent years not listening to that inner voice. And, of course, during those years, everything escalated. Everything got worse. And by the time I finally left, it was a nightmare to try and get away from this person. So if I can tell you to do anything, I would tell you to trust your inner voice. That's my advice anyway. Any real quick final words, Deborah?
Well, I think this could also apply to coworkers of people who are experiencing violence. Your coworkers know whether you tell them or not.
Yep.
But talked about could be helpful for them to find out ways to be supportive or helpful to survivors as well. We usually close with a quote, and I enjoy doing that. And our quote for today is from a gentleman named Thomas F. Crum. And he says, instead of seeing the rug being pulled out from under us, we can learn to dance on a shifting carpet.
Well, that's optimistic, but sometimes I think when you're dancing on that shifting carpet, it seems like it's more than you can actually do to try and keep your balance. So I give kudos to Mr. Crum, but, you know. from experience of dancing on that carpet, you know, it's a hard thing to do.
For three women.
Thank you. Three ways.
Three Divas. Thanks for listening in.
Thanks so much for joining us today, and join us next week. And that is Three Women, Three Ways on Talk Radio.